Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are hard to predict, sometimes even hard to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing very good.
Well, I'm really excited that we ran out of time last week on the acceleration agenda, and then it occurred to me a few minutes after the show was over, we can do another show next week. We can just pick it right back up, and you know, it's
that's
just
right. Same bat time, same bat channel.
That, you know, we really call the shots on this show. If we want to do 4-5 weeks in a row on the acceleration agenda, unless Blog Talk Radio shuts down, I'd say we could still call each other and talk about it if we wanted to, although we'd miss out on having all our friends listening live in via MP3, and of course the live chat experience wouldn't be as good. But no, we're coming back, we're doing it again. But before we get into that, anything interesting going on in your neck of the woods this week?
Well, not really. Just staying extra busy around my house. I tell you, when you got four kids, as I do. Mm-hmm. And you know, just trying to, you know, keep everything going and keeping on, you know, it's a little bit like juggling cats, you know. I mean, just when you think you've got
not hurting, juggling, yeah.
Yeah, which
Steve
is even worse.
Bit, right?
Exactly. It's a bit wild sometimes. So, yeah, it's I shouldn't complain. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's doing pretty good and getting along and everything, but it gets hectic sometimes.
Well, that's, you know, that is to be expected. I guess everyone's settled back into school at this point.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Of course, since we are homeschooling, it sometimes.
Oh,
takes,
that's easier. That's an easier transition, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, basically, we go from basically halfway homeschooling to full on homeschooling. So, I mean, we don't take the same, you know, complete break in the summertime that most kids get. It's still cool. So
very nice, very good. Well, I've got nothing of interest to report at all.
Okay.
It's all the
let's
all
play
the show
music.
Agenda. What's that? Yeah.
Let's
what's our music tonight? Yeah. It was great being with you all. We'll live to see it. No. We got a whole show to do before we get to that. I do have things to talk about, but nothing personal. That's particularly interesting that I can think of. No, it's not coming. But that's all right, because we've got some juicy stuff to get into. Well, just to kind of recap what we talked about last week, we rolled out this idea of the acceleration agenda, and we hit on some subjects that we typically avoid, or sort of glanced around some subjects that we typically avoid, as I like to put it, because I said we were going to talk about religion and politics. Well, we didn't really talk about religion, but we talked about we talked about whether God exists, which is, you know, related obviously to religion, and we, you know, kind of pondered what the not what the right response to that question is, but what the correct attitude to that question is for someone who's going to be tuned into acceleration, who's going to be tuned into the kinds of changes that we're talking about in this program, and I think that. Again, it's not so much a matter of where you fall on that particular issue. I think it's recognizing the significance of the question and recognizing just staggering implications of either answer to the question. That's it's one of those. You know, there's another one that you hear stereotypically that about the question of whether there's other intelligent life in the universe. I don't know if you've ever heard that old saw. Whatever the answer is, right? The implications are profound, right? You know, if there's someone out there, wow, that's amazing. If there's no one out there, wow,
wow.
Like,
it's all a huge universe, and we're all here alone. Yeah, that exactly. It's profound either way.
And, it's huge either way.
And the cool thing is, one or the other has to be true. So,
yeah. I mean, the way we look at the world, anyway. You know, there could be some weird third option that we're just not picturing, just because we can't picture it, I guess. So ultimately, yeah, you would think it's got to go one way or the other. Same with the God question. So just to position ourselves, I think you really need to be wowed by the significance of our existence. I'm big on existence. I wrote another a longish essay on who should exist, inspired by a Robin Hanson post on the same subject. That guy gets into some interesting stuff. This is completely sidebar, by the way. We're not talking about who should exist tonight. But did you get a chance to follow that link and read that essay by any chance?
Well, I was satisfied in your handling of it, I guess, Bill, because I never I did not click through. I thought the way you handled it was pretty good, though.
I feel like I'm really, you know, I'm mine is the for dummies version. Okay, you really want to you really want to.
But I found my level then, right?
I just mean I feel like you're not getting the full story when you read mine.
Okay.
I guess that's what I'm saying. I try to do him justice, but I don't have his understanding of philosophy and economics to lay it out there. I'm sorry.
He has written some good books. I can't name any of them right now, but I have read I've read one or two. I think it seems like.
Well, he is a profound thinker. I mean, he really takes the big picture, which I like. We had him on, what was that, about 6 months ago, talking about the dream time. And, I still kind of go back to those ideas. I mean, just actually speaking of like big, just whopping huge concepts that are hard to get your head around. Just visit his blog, Overcoming Bias, once a week or so. And you get your little fix of dizzy, as I like to put it. You know, you want to pass the dizzy test if you're really going to be an acceleration aware, speculist, fast forward radio type person. So we started out with that, and we ended up with a further discussion of top down versus bottom up, the two kind of great approaches to organizing society, and the question of, you know, which of these approaches is better suited to enable the kinds of transformations that we're talking about. And we read a little passage from Matt Ridley's book, The Rational Optimist. And, you know, I think obviously going into last week's discussion, Stephen, you and I were agreed that bottom up is the way to go, right? I think we're both very bottom up.
Absolutely. I mean, how is some bureaucrat somewhere, or even let's say in a world that's organized where it's corporations that are running everything, how would some manager of a corporation know what I want and need as well as I know it? So we get very excited about things like Fab Labs and things where we actually have manufacturing capability right on our desk. You know,
right.
That sort of thing we get wild about. So, yeah, techno-libertarians, I guess, is what you.
But you know, Stephen, that just goes to show you've never really spent a lot of time with an HR director, because that person knows what you need. Okay, now, let me tell you that not only what you need, but what the person in the office next to you needs and the person over on the other side needs. Okay,
is their job. Yeah,
I kid because I love. I'm good friends with one of our HR directors at the company where I work. But that actually takes me to where I wanted to go. I feel like we didn't get as far with that as it would have been nice to go, because we ended on the very note that I think you just repeated, which is the, and in fact, I like the analogy you gave last week better. which was, look, if we had this big planned economy and they put us all in jumpsuits and they gave us all assigned jobs, you know, how's that going to make me happy, right? I know what would actually, you know, the life I would really want, and it's not this thing that's imposed on me from on top, right?
Right. Exactly.
Is that a fair restatement?
Absolutely. And, you know, take a look sometime at the old silent movie Metropolis and see those guys marching to work and, you know, pushing buttons and everybody's wearing the same thing and everybody looks pretty glum. Well, you know, I think that would be a pretty glum existence. And I hope that's not our future.
Well, here's where I'm going to challenge you a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Because I completely agree with you, but I think that what you're describing is a very passe implementation for top-down. I think that, you know, in Metropolis, they were kind of envisioning it. They were seeing the very near future, right? They were seeing the totalitarian states of the fascists and the Nazis and the communists. Really, the 20th century was the top-down century, right? I mean, it's been called the American century, but it was also the century that the planet went nuts with trying these really planned, you know, we're going to plan and control every aspect of society experiments. And mostly they were disasters. I think everyone will agree. So I feel like what you're describing is not a likely proposed implementation of top down at this point. I think people who are going to pitch top down to us are going to pitch it along different lines.
Make me love top down.
I'm not going to make you love it. I'm telling you, I'm issuing a warning here. I'm telling you that they're not going to come and say, "Hey, we're going to," because then we'd all know to avoid that, right? Right?
Yeah.
If they came and said, "Look, we're going to put a guy named Big Brother in charge, and you're all going to get identical apartments, and you're all going to get matching clothes, and go push a button every day," we would immediately say, "No, this model will not work." Okay, whatever benefits it might have, whatever virtues it might have, and I really don't see a lot, but you know, whatever the upside of that is, that's not going to get us. You know, that's not going to give me the life I want personally. And it's not going to take us as a civilization.
I'll tell you what the benefit is. Can I tell you what the benefit is? And how
okay, see, now you're taking the top-down case. Go. Good.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to tell you how it's always sold. It's freedom on one side that, you know, we argue for. At least we're arguing for, you know, in this case, okay? It's freedom on one side and equality on the other. The other side argues for equality. You know, we're... Too many people having too few, too little, and then you have these elites that, you know, and that have gotten wealthy, and that's just not fair, and so we need to equalize. That's how top down is sold.
Right.
There you go. But I would rather live in a world with mobility where people have a chance to move up and down, than to be guaranteed, misery. Which is pretty much that way.
Which seems like is a possibility anyway, right? I mean, it's,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, there's all yeah. You can't eliminate misery. You know, my thing is give me a shot at not being miserable. Don't make us all equally miserable.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the equality that you finally get.
Yeah.
There's a great passage in one of P.J. O'Rourke's books about. He was wandering around in East Germany, and this is a few years before the Berlin Wall came down, and he's just observing just the ugly plainness and just dreariness of the place, and reflecting back on that a few years later, he talks about there are all these analyses around what caused the collapse of the Soviet system. You know, there's political forces, there's economic forces, there's these vast sociological movements, there's these demographic shifts, there's oil, there's Islam, there's so many things you can look at. Reagan, you know, Solzhenitsyn, Pope John Paul II, all these big players. And he said, I think what finally did it is that people didn't want to wear Bulgarian shoes anymore. You know, it was like these people in East Germany, you know, it's like they wanted something else in their life besides this crap that the Soviet system pretty much forced upon them. You know,
exactly.
They couldn't take it anymore, and they insisted on something else.
I was in 1991. I was finishing up college in 1991, and I was able to go with a college group to Europe. And one of our our first stop was Berlin. And we were there in West Berlin, and the wall had just come down that spring. And so, you know, we walked right up to the wall there, and in fact, they still were running Checkpoint Charlie. If you wanted to, you know, even though whole sections of the wall were down, the East was still insisting, if you want to do it legally and not be arrested, they had lost control. They had lost complete control. People were wandering back and forth all the time. But they were, we, being tourists, we didn't want to, chance it. And so we went through Checkpoint Charlie and walked around in the East a little bit too. West was, as modern a city as you can possibly imagine. Just beautiful, vibrant city. East, bullet holes from World War II still on the walls, man. I mean, piles of rubble. I mean, I cannot express to you. There's no exaggeration that can be made because it's just the difference was so stark, you just wouldn't believe it. The only thing that had, you could tell that had been done really was, these vast government projects like putting up this huge TV or radio tower thing that, dominated the skyline there in the East. I think basically to jam any TV signals that might come in so that, their people couldn't see what the other side looked like. Just a stark look at it. And so I never been much of a fan of communism, and that kind of brought it home. So
yeah, well, and I think this is where I think real diehard fans of communism are pretty hard to find these days. I mean, North Korea, you'll find some, I guess, hangers on in Cuba, but even people pushing for increased government top down kind of control of the economy, I think would agree that East Germany was not a good place, right? I mean, it would be a hard case to make in this day and age. I'm not saying there aren't those who wouldn't attempt it, but by and large, there's not a lot of apologists for the Soviet system anymore. Even people who should have taken, even people who took a long time to get to where they admitted that was a huge disaster, finally do. Even what's his name, Pete Seeger, right? Finally came around and started saying something bad about Stalin at last. I mean, you reach a point where it's just undeniable that's bad. But the idea of increasing the amount of authority, the amount of control that the government has, that hangs on. It starts to take different forms. I think that's a great picture you just painted, actually, of the difference. I mean, literally, there was a wall between two halves of a city there. One half that was more or less allowed to practice a certain amount of bottom up, and the other one where none of that was allowed pretty much to go on. The only bottom up activity was criminal, and you let that fester for how long? 30 years at that point.
Right.
Pull the wall up and look at the difference between those two. It's like a petri dish. I mean, it's almost like Berlin was like this laboratory for demonstrating the difference between those two approaches to how to manage a society, how to manage an economy. Let me just back up a little bit because I want to talk about what we mean by the acceleration agenda. We're very much on board with what Matt Ridley describes in his book. He talks about how prosperity evolves, and basically, it's if ideas and methods and stuff, these three great things that people are good at coming up with, if people are allowed to come up with those things, and if people are allowed to freely exchange those with each other, they start, as Ridley puts it, having sex with each other, and something amazing happens. You get not arithmetic or even geometric benefits, but you get exponential benefits. You get you get benefits for all parties involved. Everyone comes out ahead in that system. And that's actually the reason.
We ought to explain for the benefit of our audience a little bit about what he's talking about when he's saying that ideas have sex. Basically, you've got ideas, you know, from all over the place, combine, recombine in ways that that you know, even the people that are doing it sometimes don't foresee the outcomes of it. And you know, and so these ideas basically have babies, and then they combine and recombine in fascinating ways. And so it's another way, I suppose, of looking at what I've called Spock's chessboard, where
exactly right, yeah.
That's the
very idea. It's by allowing enough freedom of exchange so that these ideas can cross pollinate each other. They can fertilize each other. I like the analogy of having sex with each other so that so that they start impacting each other and the people who are deploying them in ways that that weren't even expected at the time. You know, people start doing something because they want to get benefit A, and suddenly they mix a little of what these guys over here are doing, and you're getting benefits B through F, right? Suddenly you're getting B through Z, right? Just because of this multiplicative nature of how they work together. I also wanted to say that I forgot to mention this at the beginning of the show. We're pulling out all the stops because last week we talked about religion and politics, and now here we are this week talking about sex. So,
of one sort or another.
I got lots more. Hey, I got lots more sex stuff coming up. So you know, stay tuned. I think the show's going to get TV 14 this week.
Exactly. Well, I can tell you
right,
a lot. Well, let me just give you an example of ideas combining in a way that and that people don't foresee. Can you imagine Steve Jobs even trying to foresee all the ways that the iPhone would be used? And is used now. You know, when they rolled out the first generation of the iPhone, I guarantee you they did not have any idea of what the app universe would mean or what would be produced for it. Maybe you had one or two geniuses in the within Apple that might have had a clue, but where things were going. But I doubt very seriously they knew what they were unleashing.
Absolutely. Well, dial it back a little. When they came out with the iMac, did they know the iPod was coming? Did they know from the iPod it would get to the iPhone? I mean, certainly we didn't, right, on the receiving end of all that. Maybe there were some visionaries in Apple who were already drawing up those plans. But no one could predict what was going to happen once you unleash this incredible creative potential of individuals developing apps. I mean, that's what really made the iPhone come to life, is this
right.
Huge community of individuals trying to solve various problems or just trying to entertain themselves, trying to add some new benefit to the world, and the amazing things they came up with. Now we're going to come back to the iPad here in just a moment. I want to work down to that. First, through my, this is my more challenging example of top down versus bottom up, and this
okay.
has to do with the recent move that Craigslist has made. And I don't know if you heard about the change that Craigslist has made on the.
I was aware that Craigslist was having a lot of pressure put on it to remove the adult ads, which were basically, I mean, it was just ads for prostitution and. And of course, the way Craigslist is set up, it's all local, right? I mean, if I go on a Craigslist and look for a particular book or something, or this or that, I'm not buying it from some guy on the other side of the country. Often, I can save postage by just buying it from somebody local and picking it up or whatever from them. So, yeah, that's the power of Craigslist, but it was also it's being used. I think it's fair to say there was some prostitution going on, and I think they were getting a lot of pressure to end that. So
there's no question that's what was going on. I should clarify that not all the adult content has been removed from Craigslist. They still have a section called casual encounters. So if you just want to hook up with somebody, Craigslist is still there for you. Okay. It's if you offer that service professionally, it was the adult services section that the escorts, as we are euphemistically to refer to them, that were removed. And from what I understand, if you were to read those ads, it's pretty specific what was being talked about, although it had to be talked around, because if you actually put in writing, this is going to be a sexual encounter for money, then that's a crime. You absolutely can convict someone for that. I mean, that would have been illegal for those things to be published. So it had to always be glanced around and talked around. And to the extent that it was talked around, according to precedent set in the either federal courts or maybe all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, perfectly legal, First Amendment allowed free speech. All right. There was no violation of laws going on within that speech. There was certainly a suggestion of it, and certainly a suggestion that people acting on this information were then going and violating the law, right? But the language itself was not a violation of the law. However, Craigslist comes under tremendous pressure from groups that are concerned about women being exploited, and concerned about, you know, children being exploited. These are the two big concerns.
Maybe just
that
general morality, you know. So I mean, you know, So you have all these different groups that really pushed Craigslist to end this practice, and their response was this: leaving the casual encounters section in place.
Yeah. Well, here's what's really interesting about this. Yeah, because the morality argument doesn't really fly, okay? Because it's protected speech. I mean, it flies. You can make the argument, but it's like, well, then why wouldn't you take out casual encounters?
I'm saying there are gradations of morality, and obviously these people were saying, you know, casual encounters, you know, and here's the funny thing. I suspect, Phil, that if someone were to follow up some of those ads in casual encounters, and meet the person at the other end of it, there might be a suggestion at the time of meeting that maybe money needs to change hands.
Well, apparently, almost all of the adult services ads have now moved to casual encounters. Okay, so yeah, I think you're right. that's the first thing that happened.
Cynical, but I would suggest to you that is a possibility. So yeah.
Yeah. The interesting thing to me about this is this. Well, actually, now that they're over in casual encounters, they don't have to pay for the ads. So it's like now if there are people doing human trafficking, they're getting away with it for free. And actually, here's the real crux. Apparently, Craigslist had been very cooperative with law enforcement around putting a charge in place for placing those ads. What they wanted was they wanted credit card numbers, they wanted addresses, they wanted to be able to track whether human trafficking was going on. Human trafficking really was the issue, not so much whether prostitution is going on, because I think at this point most law enforcement agencies are kind of resigned to the fact that there's a certain amount of that going on in most municipalities, you know, for what it's worth. But there's a very real concern that, you know, you've got women being exploited, you've got children being exploited, that people are engaged in this activity of human trafficking. So Craigslist was very cooperative with law enforcement in terms of helping them to track people, and I guess they led to quite a few investigations, if not some convictions along the line. So it actually wasn't the kind of man in the street law enforcement who was big on pulling this down. Apparently, there were some state attorneys general who kind of got on the bandwagon, and it became sort of a glamorous hot case to be pursuing. And naturally, when you're able to make the case, well, we're protecting exploited women, we're protecting children. I mean, that all sounds very good. Although the benefit to the exploited people in the end is kind of questionable, because it's like, well, the ads didn't really go away. They moved to another part of Craigslist. And even if they're taken off Craigslist altogether, it's not like they're going to go away from the net altogether. And even if they do go away from the net altogether, you wonder if they're going to go away from you know, whether those services are going to stop being offered. And unfortunately, I think they're probably not. But to me, the interesting question here is, you know, where does this fit in to a discussion about bottom-up versus top-down? Because it seems to me that Craigslist is a great example of a huge bottom-up enterprise that worked out great.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who originally started sending emails to his friends back in the, like, 80s, early 90s, turns into a website and turns into this worldwide phenomenon. People have stuff they want to share, have things they want to do with each other, have things they want to give away, and they bypass the old system of doing it, which was to pay to put an ad in the paper. They put a free ad up on the net, up on the internet, and boom, boom, boom. Information is exchanged, ideas are exchanged, methods are exchanged. It's a bottom-up paradise, Craigslist, right? Okay. Now, the question is, when the authorities come and shut down adult services on Craigslist, is that a good use of top-down or a bad use of top-down? That's the quandary. That's the conundrum I'm up against on looking at this case. And I get the feeling, Stevens, you're saying probably it was an okay one.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was probably a good thing. Although I'm not so naive as to think that it went away on Craigslist. You know, and it probably will be a little harder to track. You know, so I guess I'm looking at it in a completely practical, pragmatic kind of way. I'm a little bit hard pressed as to explain why it's better that it be taken out of Craigslist. So I will.
Well, there's a case to be made either way. I provided a link to a site that is dedicated to stopping human trafficking, and they give the list of reasons why it needed to go. And if you read that list of reasons, you go, geez, yes, they've got to stop providing those ads. And I think that list probably, in some way, answers all of the arguments I made about it just now. But I also provided another link where an advocate made a very strong argument around the First Amendment issue here. And this is actually where I was going with my whole discussion of they take a different tack. Top-down comes to us via a different means these days. There's still a lot of talk about evening out results and making everything fair, and I actually think that the way our government in the U.S. has gone the last couple of years is kind of an aberration in that direction. I think generally we've moved away from that, and it seems that generally the world is moving away from that, but we've sort of gone in that direction over the last couple of years, so you would think, well, that's the big thing, is that the big move to top down is all around straightening out outcomes, economic outcomes. We're gonna make the world more fair. We're gonna give money to the poor and you know, punish all those evil capitalists who are making too much money and level things off and sort things out. I really don't think that's where the big push comes for top down. I think the big push comes for top down in a very insidious way, and the argument is we're going to protect you. There's danger out there in the world, and you need to be protected from that. And I think, and I truly don't know what the right answer is on the Craigslist thing. That's why I feel perfectly comfortable putting it up there, because I'm like, I look at it and go, I don't know. I feel strongly both ways, as I so often do when I'm faced with a controversial subject. But I'm immediately suspicious of the we have to curb the First Amendment here in order to protect you. When the Democratic Convention was in Denver 2 years ago, there was this whole interesting security situation going on where they had designated what they call designated free speech zones. You know,
yeah.
if you wanted to protest, it's like, well, the convention's here, six blocks away, you can go down here, and this is called the free speech zone. You know, there were some of us who looked at that and said, "Oh, wait a minute."
In the United States is a free speech zone, or at least it should be, right?
Yeah, the whole country, I thought, was a under the First Amendment, a free speech zone. Well, the argument being, and you know, it's a very valid sounding argument when it's made by, in this case, it would have been, you know, our city fathers and law enforcement, and there were probably some federal authorities involved in this too. We just don't want anything ugly to happen. We don't want anyone to get hurt. And so to avoid that, to protect you, for your security, we're taking away your constitutional right to free speech, right? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
that's pretty much how it came down. And you know, of course, they had visions of what was it, the 68 Democratic Convention that like it just blew up, and people died, and it was a horrible thing. That's probably what they were imagining, and that's what they did. But exactly, it comes down to how much freedom are we going to allow? It's safety versus freedom in these cases. So
yeah, it's the old, if you sacrifice freedom for security, you'll in the end you get neither one. And the fact that our freedoms have to be limited is most often presented to us in the form of security. But the up and coming one is for our health. Right. I mean, that's become a big one, probably in my lifetime. I mean, you know, it started with very, very reasonable things like people becoming aware of the fact that they shouldn't overeat, they shouldn't drink too much, they shouldn't smoke, that we should curb our own behavior and manage our own lifestyles to be healthier. Well and good. I think everyone's okay with that idea. Not everyone is okay with, you know, the mayor of New York deciding that KFC can't cook food in trans fat, right? Suddenly it's like, well, that seems pretty far gone at that point. You've got the mayor of New York deciding how much salt can be in dishes that are served in New York City restaurants. And you look at that and you say, you know, this is kind of insidious when you think about it. This is like the level of control that the folks who were touting the let's all salute Big Brother every day and put on the jumpsuits, they even never got to that level of control. They would have liked it, but they never got to it because they were doing top-down economically first. But I think top-down can sneak up on us in a lot of different ways, and we have to be very, very careful about where it comes from. And I think the caution I would give to the world, to everyone listening, is beware those who want to protect you. You know, maybe they're looking out for your interests, but maybe they don't realize that they're taking something even more important from you in the process of granting you this security that they're offering.
Well, I would add another one to it. Besides health, there's also the environment.
Okay, there you go.
Can you name one activity that doesn't impact either anything that you do during the course of the day, Phil, that doesn't impact either your health or the environment?
No.
If I can't, literally everything I do is in one way or another is impacting either my personal health or the environment. So if we say government health is important, and it is. And our environment's important, and it is. Therefore, you have the power to completely control everything every activities that a human could dream of that would impact either. Well, if you make that jump, say yes, government, you now have the power to control these things because our health is important and the environment is important. Then you've given it away. I mean, all freedom is gone then. So,
exactly.
Anyway. There's my political speech.
Okay, well, Stephen, you make a fine speech. However, I think the other thing we have to look at is it isn't always the government, and this is what brings us back to our friend Steve Jobs.
Okay.
And I sent you a link to a story. This made the rounds. I think it's just a few weeks ago. I don't think it was that long ago. This interesting encounter between a blogger at Gawker and Steve Jobs. The guy just he gets a little bent out of shape about something. Send Steve Jobs an email, and Jobs starts writing him back, and they have this very pointed exchange of views in which it was reported, and I think rightly so, just by the kind of burn that he got in at the end, that Steve Jobs really got the better of him, of the Gawker blogger, because it ends with, by the way, what have you done that's so great? Do you create anything or just criticize others' work and belittle their motivations, which was just kind of like, Zing, you know. I mean, that sting's coming from anybody, but, you know, when Steve Jobs lays that one on you, it's kind of like, okay, geez, I guess I didn't invent the iPad. But the question...
Have you seen the College Humor, it was like a parody of Steve Jobs answering those who had the issue with the antenna on the iPhone 4?
No, I haven't seen it.
I definitely need to send the link, and I'll put it up in the show notes. Hilarious, mildly not safe for work, maybe, but basically he's being very, very sarcastic in his response. So anyway, but in a hilarious way. So I'm gonna put that.
Let's add a link to the show notes for that. I'd like to see that. That sounds cool. So, yeah, this guy starts out. He writes to Jobs and he says, "If Dylan was 20 today," referring to Bob Dylan, whose song is referenced in one of the iPad commercials, "how would he feel about your company? Would he think the iPad had the faintest thing to do with, quote, revolution? Revolutions are about freedom." And this guy's particularly been out of shape about the lack of support for Flash, but I think there were some other standards that he would also like to see the iPad support. Steve Jobs writes back, "Yep, freedom from programs that steal your private data, freedom from programs that trash your battery, freedom from porn. Yep, freedom. The times are a-changing, and some traditional PC folks feel like their world is slipping away. It is." One thing that's great is even when this guy sends an email, he sounds like, I mean, doesn't that just sound like ad copy?
Well,
you know, it just rolls off the keyboard for his job. It's awesome.
He lives,
but
he is the man. So
the follow-up, this guy, he takes him through a few, you know, issues around PDF and Flash and some of these other things, and he ends with, "And you know what? I don't want, quote, freedom from porn. Porn is just fine." And then he adds, "And I think my wife would agree." So it becomes this interesting, you know, well, is porn a good thing or not? And Steve Jobs comes back and he says, you might care more about porn when you have kids. And so here's this really interesting discussion.
Yeah.
The head of Apple Computer, the man who has an awful lot of say in the devices carried by an awful lot of people, is essentially saying, "I'm keeping this device closed to certain things in order to protect you."
Right. Exactly.
Now, yeah.
You know,
so,
here's the reason why I'm okay with this.
All right. Okay.
Okay. The reason why I'm okay with this is that his is not the only company out there. Any level of, let's say that I'm really ticked off by the lack of Flash support on the iPad or the iPhone. Well, you know, there are other devices out there that support these things. You know, I mean, if freedom to watch all the porn I wanted was a big deal to me, I could go and get an Android phone or something like that. They're wide open. You know, I guess I put it this way, when a corporation, keeps a device like the iPad closed, it's a choice the consumers make when they go and buy those devices. It's not like, they have to move to another country, because, freedoms were taken away by Washington, okay? It's a completely different level of control that Steve Jobs has over what Congress may have. So,
that's an excellent point. I mean, he has absolute control over what happens with the iPad. A very high level.
He has a lot of influence. He has a whole lot of influence.
Let's say he has more influence probably than anyone else on what happens with that. But I think the point is very well taken that. That influence is not universal. It's universal for everyone who uses the device, but nobody makes you use the device. There are alternative devices. Now, one of the things Jobs says in one of his letters is, "Well, go start your own standard. You can start your own standard," which I think that's a little unrealistic in this day and age. You know, there was a time in the mid 70s when you could actually go out and start a standard and it might have a chance of catching on. I think today that's a little less likely. You can introduce new devices. Or you can, select other devices, or manufacturers, as you said, of other devices can have other standards. That's all true. So I think I think the buffer there is that you have a choice between, you know, this guy can go as top down as he wants to, because if he goes too far with it, people really will stop.
That's right. Yeah, if he were to make a exactly, if he were to make a decision that, you know, I don't think that people ought to be cruising the internet on their phones, you know, because hey, that's unsafe while driving. So, well, I'm going to take the browser off the iPhone. Well, I'm going to tell you, you know, that's the audience for the iPhone would just, I mean, fall. I mean, obviously. I mean, the
yeah. What are you going to do? Make calls on it? Jeez.
Yeah. Gee whiz. No way. well, give me a break. You know.
Not very good for that.
Yeah. I have a very good friend that says that's the one reason he hasn't got an iPhone yet. He says, you know, the iPhone is awesome, except as a phone. And
yeah, there it is.
Well, he has an Android, so anyway, I guess there's a point there. But anyway, yeah, if he were to be too draconian, then enough people would leave, and another standard would catch on. So yeah, it doesn't, you know. This idea,
yeah, what I guess he is a good example of what you don't want happening in government, because when it's the only game in town, you don't want having your choices restricted that way. That's the bottom line. You don't want someone doing something quote unquote for your own good, especially when I have to say, and I believe he is absolutely sincere about wanting to protect kids from porn, and I think that's a noble thing and that's a good thing, and I agree with that goal. But therefore he won't allow PDF on the iPad. Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know,
that makes no sense at all.
You know, we're protecting the children by not putting PDF on the okie dokie. The best intentioned people who are out to protect us by limiting our choices have mixed motivations when they go about implementing these things. Okay, and I really think that whether he would want to admit it or not, Steve Jobs has mixed motives about what it is he's doing. I know that he wants to protect kids from porn. I think that's a noble thing, but come on, PDF, give me a break.
I'm surprised PDF doesn't work on an iPad, because I know there are apps that will run PDF on an iPhone, but they're not ported over to the iPad.
PDF was mentioned in the email, so I don't know. I just point that one out. But that's a good, point.
If somebody has an iPad, let us know.
If you're on an iPad and you're running PDF, tell me to shut up, because I don't know what I'm talking about. but to say it nicely, because I'm kind of sensitive. Well, listen, I think we've beaten this dead horse. That was really where I wanted to go with that, was just that it's a lot harder, I think, to make the judgment calls between when top down is good and when it's bad than it looks superficially. And we have to be thinking about the end game of anyone who's offering us a great deal, we're gonna keep you safe. So here's what you need to give up in order to keep safe. Because when we give up our freedom, when we give up our ability to interact with each other at any level, when we give up our ability to share ideas, to share the stuff we've made, to share the methods, then we actually slow down the progress that will ultimately correct the problems that most of the top-down solutions have ineffectively been trying to solve for the last 100 years or so. I don't believe the technological progress is going to give us a world of equal outcomes. I believe that technological progress is going to give us a world of vastly improved outcomes for everyone. So the fact that there's inequality simply won't matter, because the problems that we were trying to eliminate, the poverty, the illness, the, you know, the degradation and exploitation of people, those can all be eliminated. And that's really the key. But we get there by people being free enough to continue this process to create a world of abundance that makes that possible, not through limiting our freedom. So there was 50 minutes on that subject that probably could have been accomplished in 10, but hey, it's more fun to go about it this way. Now, before I lay out my great plan for how we're going to implement the acceleration agenda, how you, listening at home or on your iPod, can help bring about the acceleration agenda. Before we do that, I've got one piece of acceleration news that we absolutely have to share, and this is dedicated to you, Sally. I don't know if you saw this story, But I'm sure your Twins have successfully beaten the Chicago Cubs by now. I haven't checked the score here lately. But just to make your evening complete, here is the headline from Popular Science. In sweet breakthrough, scientists led by makers of M&M's sequence the chocolate genome. And
that's right.
The story
cocoa
here is...
It has been sequenced.
What's that? Go ahead.
The cocoa tree has been sequenced.
The cocoa tree has been sequenced, and so chocolate is about to yield all the secrets of its magic to us. We're going to understand chocolate in ways that that we never could before, and I think we're about to see, can I call it the chocularity? I think we're heading into an age that will be remembered. I think there's going to be an explosion of chocolate technology here over the next...
Chocolatey goodness, that's right.
Over the next
You know what's great? You know what's great about this story? If you read further down into the Popular Science story, you see that there's competing genome project. I mean, it completely mirrors the whole Craig Venter, you know, deal. You got M&M Mars over here. They beat to the punch. Guess who? The Hershey Group.
The other group that was working on it. I mean, it's just awesome. It's like the Americans and the Russians trying to get to the moon, right? You got M&M Mars and Hershey trying to sequence the cocoa plant gene sequence.
Now, what's great, Mars wanted to, they hurried up and got out this rough draft of the genome that they are putting in the public domain. Hershey was intending to keep it to themselves and maybe patent some of it. So, you know, they get to be the evil guy this time. So, anyway, it's somebody could write a pretty fun novel about
I bet there's a book coming. But the great thing to remember here, Sally, is the harder they compete with each other, we're the winner, right? I mean, because it's just that much more chocolate knowledge leading to that many more chocolate improvements coming very soon. So I think a whole new world of chocolatey goodness is about to open up for us, and I'm very excited about it and wanted to share that with you, Sally. So now, here's my plan, Stephen. I have not
our chocolate soldiers and
exactly. I've not laid this on even you, Stephen. So this is a surprise even for you. This is
okay.
What I want to do. If we want to really push out the acceleration agenda, if we want fast forward radio, we want the speculists, we want all of us listening, you and I, to truly become a part of this. Well, we've been talking about, we want to get Matt Ridley on the show. And we want to have Max Moore on. We want to talk to Matt Ridley about The Rational Optimist, obviously. We want to talk to Max Moore about a book he has in development called The Pro-Cautionary Principle, both of which I think have a lot to say about how we get from here to there. I think before we have Matt on the show, we should help promote the ideas that are in his book. And here's my notion for how we can help promote the ideas that are in his book. I think we should help him sell, I don't know, a certain number of copies of the book. What would be a good number?
I don't know. You think we could do 100?
I think we could do 1,000. Okay?
Well, hey, how are you?
I mean, I could take out a second mortgage and buy 1,000, but that's not where I'm going, okay?
All right.
Here's how I'm going to work it. I'm going to start this very small, and I'm going to start it this week. I have put aside enough money to purchase 3 copies of this book, and I am going to send 3 copies of this book to 3 friends that I'm choosing based on likelihood that they'll actually respond, that they'll read it. And my request to them will be simply this. If you find, I selected you as someone who I thought would be interested in the ideas presented here. If you're as excited about these ideas as I am, would you please pay it forward? Would you please purchase a copy of this book and give it to someone else? Or if you don't find you're excited about it, would you please just pass on the copy that I've given you to someone else? And
I've got an idea.
Okay.
I just put in the chat room a link. Click through that link and download a Kindle version for free. It's free on the Kindle right now.
Oh wow!
Which I thought that's awesome to me. So I mean, if even if you don't have a Kindle, I mean, if you have an iPhone or an iPad or or even a PC, you can download the Kindle software onto your PC and or Mac and just read it on your PC for free. Download the book from Amazon and by following that link. So,
well, okay, I'm going to pursue my hardback strategy, but with this piece of information that you've added, Stephen, I think 1,000 is absolutely the right number. Is there any doubt that between you and me and our friends listening live and our friends who listen via the Internet that following a procedure similar to the one that I've outlined, and I'll write it up on the blog and we'll talk about it again next week, that we can push out 1,000 copies of this book and really help spread the word about The Rational Optimist? If it's free, I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited that it's free, and the price is right. So,
I'll send out 10 a day for 3 months, and that'll be 1,000. So,
that's right. But obviously, we want people other than ourselves to have read the book. So, I mean, if you hear in this podcast, and you're all impressed with the ideas we have, we stole a good bit of it from Matt Ridley. So. Give that book a read. Please do.
Actually, if you pick up on what I've just said and you're ready to move ahead with it, send me an email and let me know, because I want to keep track of how many books we're pushing out. And I do urge those who are willing to take up the challenge to give an actual hard copy of the book away, simply because we'd like to support Matt in his work. And we'd like to see him get money for what he's doing, especially because a certain share of every sale of the book is going not just to him, but to organizations that are working on exactly these kinds of issues. So if you buy a copy, or if you buy a couple of copies and distribute those to people that you know that you're not only helping Matt out, but you're doing additional work to help bring about the acceleration agenda. So this is a little experiment. I feel like it's kind of a chain letter kind of approach. It's kind of a pyramid scheme kind of approach, but I'm perfectly comfortable with it simply because I have no skin in this game whatsoever.
Absolutely.
I'd like to sell 1,000 of these books because I think it would be great if 1,000 of these books got sold and 1,000 new people were introduced to these ideas. Go ahead, Steve.
I was just going to say, I actually purchased this book for my Kindle. In the middle of a show about 4 or 5 weeks ago, right? No, actually, it was longer.
That's right. Yeah,
that.
Yeah. I remember you saying we were talking, and you were like, "Okay, I've got it now." Yeah,
I've got it. I plan to read it. Well, and I did. And man, I don't know that I. When was the last time I enjoyed a nonfiction book as much as that? Maybe The Singularity Is Near. It would be a comparable reading experience. It's just a great, great book. So, yeah,
absolutely. It's absolutely worth reading, and I hope that everyone listening who hasn't given it a chance, who hasn't looked at it yet, will pick up a copy. And if you are as impressed with it as we are, that you'll follow our example, which is that we're going to try to encourage a few other people to read it and see if we can, by the time we get around to asking Matt to be on the show, tell him, Matt, we like your book so much we got 1,000 copies of it out there into the world. Now come on and talk to us on Fast Forward Radio. Not as an incentive for him to come, but just because I think that would be a nice welcoming gesture for a guest on Fast Forward Radio. I'd really like for us to take on this little project. We've been meaning to do something a little more active. Sally's got a great idea here about putting it on Facebook. You see those challenges sometimes. Can I get 1 million people to say they like raisins or something like that? Well, this is right up there, okay? Can we get 1,000 people to buy Matt Ridley's book? Anyway, I'll be putting some details about this up on the blog, and we'll be talking about it soon. I've talked about this longer than I meant to, Stephen, so what's our music this evening?
The music is Hoodoo by Maniac.
All right, Maniac singing Hoodoo. Sometimes I don't know how you keep the song and the artist name straight. Thanks for putting that together. And thanks for everyone for being part of the show. We look forward to being with you again at the normal time next week. And until then, live to see it.